Today is November the 19th, 1980. This is Madeline Buble interviewing Florence Lehman Tierhart at her home in Castroville, Texas. I am interviewing for the Castroville Public Library Oral History Project B. Florence, we're just going to talk about your life in general from when you can remember. But first of all, when were you born? Your birth date?
I was born on the 7th of April in 1911.
And where were you born?
On the ranch up there, our homestead.
Would you tell me where this was located?
It was exactly 1 mile from Castroville, that is from where the city office now is. It's exactly 1 mile.
Is it near the river?
Yes, it is. In fact, a half a mile of the road we had to travel to come to Castroville was all along the river bank.
Do they call it the river road, perhaps? Or is that...
Well, later on, yes, we gave it that name.
Who were your parents?
Edward Lehman, and Josephine Keller.
Okay. Would you describe the house that you lived in on that out there on the farm?
Well, the house we lived in was, I guess, built by maybe the great-great-grandfather. And then the grandfather, my grandfather, bought it from him, and then my daddy bought it from his daddy. And that's way back there, I really wouldn't know, but when, as far as I can remember, it was a big house, quite large then. It had a big bedroom with a fireplace in it. And that was all built out of rock. And then next to that was another room, but now that was built out of lumber. Of course, we always called it our dining room. It was rather more or less a hallway. And then next to that was another room, which when we were little, it was our sitting room. Of course, later on, it was turned into a bedroom after the family got bigger and so on. But from what I have heard them say, there was two more rooms next to this house or added on to it, but later on they were pulled away because of old age and they were built out of lumber and things. Then when they built these two newer rooms on there and the kitchen part, why they removed these two rooms that, well, finally got the rotted and didn't have no more foundation and what all.
Did it have a porch?
Yes, it had a long porch all along the front side of it. Had a nice railing all along with these nice banisters, we called them. Mm-hmm. They were painted green, and then on top of those banisters was a nice round railing. And below that porch, the porch was up at least, I would say, 6 feet or something like that. And all along that foundation then was a flower bed built. It was about 2 feet wide, I'd say, but all along that porch that was built out of rock, and these flower beds were filled with dirt, and we always had flowers growing in there, and in the front yard then it was just plain dirt for a while, and then later on we got to where we could plant Bermuda grass. Those days we didn't know nothing of these grasses they're growing now. It was just mainly Bermuda or whatever grass did grow at that time.
Did you ever have a swept yard where you just had the sand, swept clean or not?
No, not really. It was always kind of loose dirt, and we had our garden close to our house, and out in our backyard was, of course, our smokehouse where we had our lard and our sausage and our bacon. Those days we always had to several big hogs to butcher a year, and then usually the neighbors would go together and they would divide a calf. One would kill a calf one by maybe early part of the year, the winter time, and give the neighbor half of it, and then later in the winter the other one would butcher a calf and give him the half of his calf back again. And they'd use their own hogs they raised, and they'd make their sausage out of this. But every year we had our own sausage and bacon. And the bacon, that was put up in a brine in big crocks with salt water for a week or 10 days, and then it was taken out of this salt water, and we let it drip dry for a day or two, and then we take a big can or a pan and fill some chips, we called them, from the wood pile in there, and put coals in there and cover it up with these fine chips, so that would make a tremendous smoke. And that's how we smoked our sausage and our bacon and things like that. And when the sausage, we used to have too many. Why, I remember they used to take a number, quite a few gallons of lard and kind of soften it. And then they'd take the sausage and they'd cut them up into smaller pieces, and they would fill one of these crocks. They'd put lard in the bottom, and then they'd put a layer of sausage, and they'd put another layer of lard, and they'd put another layer of sausage, and that's how we kept our sausage. As for fresh sausage, now the dry sausage we just leave and let them dry as we were smoking them, and along with the bacon too then. And when we butchered, we always had to render our own lard, and we'd have most every year 3 to 4 10-gallon cans of our hog lard, and that would last us from one season to the next. And that's all we ever had to cook with or bake with or anything else. And we raised our own chickens, and we raised some turkeys, usually we lived close to the river. In those days, there weren't too many people would come out camping, but then later on when they got cars or vehicles to go out, they would go along the river and camp sometime. And I remember when we used to sell eggs to those campers for 5 cents a dozen, sometime 10 cents when the eggs went up.
Now, this was when you were a girl at home.
That's when I was a kid at home,
okay,
yes.
Okay.
And when it was pecan time, like about in latter part of August and in September is when the pecans would start to drop pretty good. And campers, that's the time they usually like to come out because they like to pick pecans. And when we had a good crop of pecans, usually we had to go down there on Saturday evening and pick pecans up all along. It was a public road went through there. We had to pick up all those pecans because on Sunday, if campers would come, they'd pick up quite a number of them. And we couldn't afford to lose them pecans because we got about 4 or 5 cents a pound for them them days. And I know many a pound my daddy sold for 5 cents a pound. They even had to haul them to Castorville or even to La Costa sometime. with the wagon and the team of mules. And
how much was a crop? Did you have in sacks or what?
Several hundred or maybe a few thousand pounds, mm-hmm. if it was a big crop, okay. because we had quite a good-sized pecan grove mm-hmm. up there. But they were big pecan trees all along the river, anybody that had land along the river. And the pecan crop was ordinarily pretty good about every other year. We had a good pecan crop. Most every year we had some pecans. But when about every other year we had a good crop of pecans. And about September, they were really pretty well ripened. And when we started school then, we always had to stay at home about the first 3-4 weeks when school started in September,
mm-hmm.
because Dad would always thrash the pecan trees that were closest to the river, because when it would rain, it would wash these pecans in the river and we'd lose them all. Mm-hmm. So he always thrashed all them trees along that were close by the riverbed. And we had to always stay at home and pick them up. And some days we'd gather as high as 300, 400, and 500 pounds of pecans when the pecans were really a good crop.
So it was more important that you stay home and get that money, kept the crop in, then go to school.
We had to have that money to buy our flour, sugar, maybe if we wanted some other kind, like the white navy. Those days you buy those little white navy beans. And there really wasn't too many things that we had to buy in the store because we raised all our own. Like red beans, there was always several rows of pintos planted through our garden lot. We had a great big garden. And some, of course, we picked green beans and Mother would can some of those. But the rest, they all stayed out there until they were dry. Then we had to pull up those dried beans and throw them on a big tarp in the yard. And during the day, we rolled that tarp open and spread them dry beans out on it. It took maybe a week or two, maybe, depended on the weather. But every night, we had to roll this tarp up again and put it inside, so the dew wouldn't get on there. And the next day, about 10 or whenever the sun come out, we'd roll this tarp open again, spread these beans out. Sometimes we'd just use a hoe or a rake or something to spread them out. When they were good and dry, then we usually had to take the handle, old handles from a hoe or just any stick like that. And we beat those beans out, and then we put them in a tub or in some big container. And then when we'd have a strong wind blowing, we would have to take those beans, say about 2-3 quarts in a bucket or a can, raise them up about 3-4 feet, and just drop them down, and all those dry leaves and things would blow out of them, and whatever did stay in there, then we took on the table sometime at night because we didn't have too much time in the daytime to do things like that. And by the lamplight, we'd assort them beans then, and whatever leaves and things was left in there, we cleaned our beans and put them up in jars. Those were our beans for the year. And we raised our own garden stuff. We had lettuce, we had carrots, we had tomatoes, we had beets, we had cucumbers and squash, and we had the little round squash, and we had the long green squash, and we had a big fruit orchard. My daddy had long rows of fruit trees, and in each row, I would say, as far as I remember, I still have postcard pictures from some of it. There were at least 12 to 15 trees, like they could have been about 12 pear trees. And then he had two rows of peach trees. One was the Clingstone and the other was the Freestone. There were probably about 12 trees of each in each row. Then he had one big row, long row of fig bushes or trees. They usually let them just grow in a bush then. And so we had all that fruit. And when we had a good crop of fruit them days, I remember he used to hitch up the team and the wagon. And them days we had, most everybody had the half bushel basket or the bushel basket. And we would fill those with the fruit, or either if we had a lot of vegetables like squash or green beans and things, we'd fill that in half bushel baskets, and some of the fruit even in bushel baskets. And he'd put them on the wagon and bring them down here to Casterville. And on Saturdays, most people would come in. Most of them come with just a buggy and the horse, and get their groceries, what they needed in the store. And he would go to one of these stores and just stop on the street, and he would sell this stuff then by the basket off the wagon.
Do you know how much he would get for a basket of that fruit?
Oh, sometimes he would get not too much. Sometimes he would sell a half a bushel of something for maybe 75 cents. And some, when it got toward evening, he still had some left, maybe 50 cents. And the bushel of fruit, well, for that he would sometimes get maybe $2 or $1.50.
But did you keep any of it and use it at home? How did you preserve it?
Well, all we could use, mostly we kept it for just fresh eating. Now, pears, I remember we used to can those, and tomatoes. We had whorls of tomatoes all the night. Those were put up in jars, and green beans were put up in jars, and but we didn't know nothing about canning like they have the cans they can with now and all that. We just had our fruit jar.
Did you dry any of it for dried fruit?
I don't remember that.
Don't remember doing that. Okay. You mentioned a while ago about rendering lard. I think that's something that ought to be described. I've done a couple of interviews and did butchering, but nobody ever described rendering lard.
Well, rendering lard was lots of work to it. When we would butcher a hog, well, that hog was cut up and the meat was cut off of the bones, and as much as they could. And then the lard, that was usually a thick layer of fat right under the skin. And this was stripped off of that, and they had usually had sharp butcher knives, and you could just strip the layer off of that. And
it
was
cut
off of the skin.
Okay.
And then it was cut into, I'd say, about an inch square piece. Mm-hmm. All of this was cut up. And if you had a big hog, you usually had a great big, those days you had those black boilers, wash boilers.
Old iron kettle.
Iron kettle.
Okay.
And that was filled, and when it started cooking, then we they always had a board kind of slap from a barrel or something like that. And we would have to stir that from the bottom. They'd add a little water to that lard until it started to cook so it would not settle onto the bottom of your kettle.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to stir that, and it finally would get enough grease in there and water to where it wouldn't set on the bottom, but however, you had to watch it, and you would just let that cook for, well, it depended on the fire you had under there. And sometimes you had to be quite careful. The way we had to cook it was with wood fire, and if you put too much under there and your lard would cook too fast or too much after it once was cooked out to a certain extent, it would like to run over. So you had to be very careful about it and stay right with it. Then when your fat was cooked out to a nice brown stage, then we usually, in our days, later on then they had these pressers for these where they'd make sausage and things with. But them days, we only would take a lard can, we tie a nice white, those days we called them flour sacks, all our flour and all that coming in nice white material sacks. We tie that over this lard can with a strong string and those old colanders. We call them colanders, strainers in other words, and set that on this white cloth. We take a cooking pot or something with a handle, dip this lard out of this kettle, pour it in this colander, and whatever went through the colander would stay on this white cloth. And these cracklings then from this lard, they were put into another big can, say maybe 15, 20 gallon size can. And that was put aside then after it had dripped out pretty good. And that was used then to make our homemade soap, which we never knew what it was to buy soaps. But then that's how we cooked our lard.
Well, the cracklings were the little brown pieces of
right.
Fat that you had
fat
cut originally. Yeah, that's what you call crackling.
That's the crackling.
And you use that for soap.
And talk about making good cornbread. You would take some of those, put them in cornbread, and it was very, very delicious, along with our homemade molasses we made.
I think another thing we ought to bring out, since we're talking about hog killing, is how they cleaned the hog, how they scraped it. Describe that.
Well, that was, it was quite a tremendous job, but they would usually kill this hog, which them days they would shoot a hog with a 22 shell. And then they would take a sharp butcher knife and they would cut their throats right about in the jugular vein. And this hog would bleed tremendously. And the women usually were ready with the big dishpan. They'd go out there and they'd catch this blood. And they never failed to do this. And they'd have a pitcher or a little bucket with water. While they'd catch that, they'd put their hand in it and they would swish it around, pour a little cold water, keep on swishing. So that wouldn't curdle, and after it was cooled off enough, they took it in the house, and then that's where they made their, we called it blood sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, they kind of went a little fancier on the name. They called it black pudding sausage.
There you go.
See? And but then they got their parsley and their green onions and all things like that. They cut it up and by a few slices of homemade bread. And they put all this together and they would cook this parsley and this green onion and all and mix it in with this and add milk to it. And then it was filled into sausage casings. And after they were all filled in these casings, they would put it in a pot. And maybe if they had quite a lot of them, they would just use this wash boiler like we used to render our lard in it. And they would cook them then a certain time, and when they were cooked, why, they would take them out and you could hang them in the... They usually didn't keep those too long. Of course, it didn't make that much either. If you had a large hog, why, maybe you'd get 15 or 20 of these casings filled.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they usually try to eat those all up the first 3 or 4 days, you know. Well, then they had neighbors to help, you know, and everybody got some of these black pudding sausage. And the scraping part, back to that, well, it was quite a tremendous job. You had to have these big kettles like we rendered the lard into, and full of boiling water, and I mean it had to be boiling hot. And they would usually take a sprinkling can, the old time sprinkling cans made out of tin. Now everything's plastic, but we had the tin cans, and they would take them and fill it with this boiling water, and then they just pour it over this hog then, and they usually had block and tackle where they pulled these hogs up and they had a stand under, and then they'd lay the hog on there and they'd scrape it then. They'd scrape these hair off, and then when they were through scraping, then they'd take warm water and they'd scrape some more and clean this skin part of the hog.
In other words, the hot water made the hair turn loose.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
What did they do with that skin then after you said that you cut the fat off of it for your hog lard? What was the skin used for anything?
The skin, what fat stayed on there, we were very conservative. We had great big bread pans. In those days, we had our wood stoves, and they had big ovens in it. Usually, what we did, and most everybody else did, we filled those skins in those deep, thick bread pans, which were, I'd say, well, as big as a big oven now is. And we put them in our oven in the stove. And you'd be surprised how much lard we got out of those skins yet.
Well, did those skins go in the crackling top?
And the skins then, they would get brown like the cracklings, you know, mm-hmm. after you put them in the oven. And they would be thrown in this can along with the cracklings,
mm-hmm.
which we put into homemade soap too.
Good. Okay. Did your father have any special kind of a job, or did he farm, or what was his occupation?
Well, we had dry farming, and my mother died when I was just 13 years old. I had one little brother 3 years old, and I had one 7, and my sister, she was 18, but she already stayed with my aunt Santonia and did a little work and sent a little money home. And my mother died in September of 24. And then Dad said, well, I would have been my last year in school, which them days they only had 8 grades. There was nothing like a 12th grade then. so he said, next year, Joe, which was my older brother, he would be old enough to start school. And he said, I believe you can stay at home this year, and then next year you can go back and finish your eighth grade, and you can take Joe along and start him out of school. So that's what happened then. I had to miss 1 year of school, and of course he kept on farming, and we had from 8 to 10, sometime 12, milk cows that we milked morning and evening. And he would raise hogs. Usually that was our evening chores. When we got home from school, we had to get in that corn crib and shuck corn and soak the corn for the them days. He raised the hogs, and he always had three or four litters of them a year. And when the hogs were about half grown, say 150, 200 pounds, they called them shoats. I don't know if that's still what they call them, but that's what we call them. He would send them to San Antonio and sell them to the market, and that was our money then to pay taxes and whatever we had to pay.
You were 13 when your mother died. Okay, before she died, let's go back to that. Did she have any kind of a weekly routine as far as the taking care of the house was concerned? No?
Not really. Work in the garden.
I thought...
Sewing. She did most all the sewing. She did... sewed all of my daddy's shirts, and she sewed all the clothes for us children. And did very little embroidery work. Those days they used to do a lot of tatting work, which she did a lot of that too.